From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 9th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
What an exciting Ante Up-filled show we have for you today.
Yes, we didn't even look for real news out there this week, folks, because we have so much Ante Up news that it's just an Ante Up gorge fest for our fans.
And if anything's going on in the poker world, we'll get to it next week.
All right, first up, the scheduled structures for next month's Ante Up World Championship at Thunder Valley Casino Resort have been announced. The 17-event series runs August 13th through the 29th, and Scott will be And I will be there all but the first day, so stop by to say hi. Here are the highlights. Satellites began on August 6th for many different events with a really cool new satellite option this year, Chris. A $90 step satellites are being offered to a $375 satellite, where one in eight entrants win an entry in both the Ante Up NorCal Classic and the World's Main Event. So you'll win seats to two events in that
one. Nice.
$1.1 million in guaranteed prize money, including $500,000 in the 1650 two-flight main event, which runs August 27th to the 29th. Other big guarantees are $250,000 for the Monolith and $100,000 each for the NorCal Classic and the Action 8 8-handed event. No-limit hold'em events include Limit Omaha 8, Pot Limit Omaha, and Horse, and you know I'll be there for all three of those.
Yep.
Other special events include the 30-30-30 with 30,000 in chips, 30-minute levels, and a $30,000 guarantee. The NorCal Jack Stack with 30,000 in chips. The 20-20-20 with 20,000 in chips, 20-minute levels, and, yep, $20,000 guarantee. And the always popular Ante-Up Head-to-Head Championship, which sells out in advance. For the full schedule instructions, go to ThunderValleyResort.com.
Are you going to enter the heads-up again this year?
Well, you know, I've never not, so I feel like I have to, even though we're poor. So
poor and rusty.
Yeah, hopefully we'll do all right in some of these non-hold'em events early on. And I'll build up a little bankroll so I can afford to take another shot. You know, I did cash in it once, so.
Yes, and if I remember correctly, aren't the cash games really juicy for you out there, too? Like, you can make some money that way, too.
Most years, they have been really good for me. The last couple that have been out there, they have not been kind to me. So maybe I am just getting old and can't play. But
rusty.
We'll see. But, you know, I'm saving the company money this year, Chris, which I haven't even told you, so I'm announcing live to the world here. I did not rent a car for this trip, so I will be locked in at Thunder Valley the entire time I'm there. So, probably playing a ton of poker.
Excellent.
See what happens. But really fantastic. You know, obviously, this series has been a month long. The last time it was held back in 2019 before the whole world changed. So the fact that our good friend Ben Irwin, the director of poker there, was able to pack so much value into a couple weeks as they, you know, get back in the tournament game was fantastic. So I think this satellite thing is pretty cool, and just how he arranged the schedule. So there's enough fun for everyone. So please come out and see us.
We should have like a live stream set up on you 24/7 to see just what your life is like out there with no car. Just to see what Scott's up to today. You know, like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Where in the casino is Scott Long? That'd be kind of fun.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I'll do all right there. I mean, they got a nice pool. They got that steam room, and the rooms are nice, and, you know, I'll get some work done. But I'll be playing a lot of poker, so.
Excellent.
Just won't be driving around to soccer matches and concerts and stuff. So. All right, we've teased you long enough, but the Ante-Up memorabilia auction is now live. You can go bid on great items from the Ante-Up Vault from now through 9 p.m. Eastern on July 20th. Go to 32auctions.com/anteup to bid. That's the numeral 3, the numeral 2, the word auctions.com/anteup. And we'll post that link in the Ante Up fans page on Facebook as well, so you can just click and bid.
Yes.
And bid. All right, so here's some of the details. A free 32 Auctions account is required to bid on items. All items come with an Ante-Up magazine patch, an Ante-Up poker tour patch, and an Ante-Up dealer button. And all of them can be autographed by me or Chris or both if desired. So I have a feeling I'm going to be signing a lot of stuff, and you might not be signing
it. No one likes me, so I'm fine with that.
But yeah, so everything you bid on will come with those additional items, so that's pretty cool for the Antiope fam. And I'll include free shipping within the United States. If you're international and you win, you will need to pay for shipping, which we'll calculate after the auction ends, and of course any applicable customs duties in whatever country you live in. Here are the items. Oh, man. Chris got me up
early. Oh, here we go. Sorry, I got. I made Scott do the show earlier today. I got some stuff to do, and so he's got that frog in his throat.
Here are the items up for auction. We have two Apes bananas, you know, from back. Remember the Randy Up
series,
right?
Yes.
It's cheap little bananas that I'd buy at Walmart until I couldn't get them at Walmart. And I would stick a little sticker on them. Not even a sticker, it's a piece of paper with attached with some Scotch tape. But people loved them. So
priceless. Priceless.
They are priceless. They're not being made anymore, folks.
That's right.
These are two that were not claimed by their winners. One is a hose and one is a No Limit Hold'em. Two separate auctions, so two separate people will have bananas to put in their tailpipes.
Yeah, we don't want to, okay, Eddie Murphy, we don't want to throw anybody off here. When we say a hose, it's not a hose.
Yes, yes.
It's for the Hold'em Omaha Stud 8 and Stud 8, Stud and Stud 8 or better series. It's not a hose. It's not a banana hose.
I imagine you could, like, tunnel something through it.
Yeah, you could cut the ends off.
That would make it even less priceless, though.
Hmm.
All right, item number three is an Antiope fan memorabilia pack, we're calling it. It includes Antiope cut cards, Antiope cruise card covers, and the actual DB dealer button that we used in the Antiope home game. So home game used memorabilia here. I think we moved on to a different dealer button after that. So this is the original one. And, of course, now we all have, like, smartphones with timers and stuff.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But it was good. It's still there. It's weathered the test of time, but it is weathered.
Yeah, but I remember that. That's a great button. I think I still have a couple like within my collection somewhere. I'm not sure though. And is that the one that had the 1 minute warning too, to let you know there's a minute left? And
I think it did. Yeah. I don't know if that was the second generation or not.
I can't remember.
It was an ingenious little thing. Yeah. I don't know what happened to those folks, but back in the day, that was an ingenious thing because it was a dealer button that had the timer right in it. So
remember that place that had the all of the buttons worked together within the room? They had right, and they had Wi-Fi that hooked up to each other, whatever you want to call it, RFID or whatever the hell you call that stuff. And it told you what the blinds were on the button, and they all worked together. And they turned colors; it would turn yellow to let you know there was a minute left, then red when and then green when it was back to the next level, and it was crazy.
Yeah, really, I mean, putting this stuff together really was a trip down memory lane from our, 16 years in business now? Yeah. 16 years since the podcast started.
So. Podcast, right. I considered it business when we were doing that stuff at the Times together. I think we were in business together.
And these cruise card covers, we've actually never offered these to folks that have not been on the cruise before. So this is a great way of getting, I don't know how many were in there. You can see the picture and count them if you want. But
right.
Those are really nice. And the Antiope cut cards, a little fun history lesson from this. We had a dealer actually come to us one day. He's like, you know what? This is back when we were just the Florida Poker Magazine, right?
Right.
And he came to us and said, hey, you know what would be really cool is if you produced Antiope cut cards, because I would use one as a dealer. And I'm like, So I looked around, figured out where we could get them printed, and then shipped them off to all the poker rooms in Florida, and heard immediately that a lot of them were putting them out, which is fantastic. Great free advertising for us, right? And then a couple of weeks later, maybe a month later, we started getting calls that the ink on them were running off on the cards.
Yeah.
And that was my introduction, folks, to Alibaba. Okay, which I've gone down this rabbit hole a lot on Alibaba lately, because you know you can buy full-size cars on Alibaba and boats and stuff, and I'm just mesmerized by getting something from China sent to me. But after knowing what happened to our cut cards, I don't know. So when you win the cut cards, you might just want to, like, you know, display them on the wall.
Yeah, or if you just want a cut card, you can use it, but the ink's coming off.
Yeah, just make sure you use your crappy deck.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that Antiope Magazine Vanessa Russo banner that we had displayed, that was our first banner that we used to promote the company with.
Yep.
Back in the day, we eventually swapped it out for the grinder, which is we still have somewhere. It's all beaten, battered in our storage unit, I think. We still bring it on cruises, though, back when we did cruises. So.
Yeah.
But it's large. It's 7 feet tall and by, I think, 32 inches wide. So it's going to look nice in somebody's poker room. So.
Right.
All right, and then we got some Anti-Up Poker Cruise used J-Design playing cards. Now, these are interesting. Obviously, our good friend Jason Holley at J-Design has done right by us over the years. It's been our official playing card of the Anti-Up Cruises. We've given a lot of stuff away on the show here, including uncut
sheets. The big sheets, yep.
So to be clear here, we're not reselling the stuff that he gave us. This is what happens on, like, you know, well, any poker room, but on our cruise, you know, every once in a while you'll notice a card gets dinged or you know, whatever, and it can't be used anymore, right? So you take it out of you take the whole deck out of circulation, obviously. And then, so we asked our poker cruise manager at the time, what do we do with these other 51 cards, right? And he's like, no, you just hold on to them. And, you know, if you get another foul deck with the same color, you can make a workable deck. And I'm like, oh, that's intelligent. I love it. And it actually worked for us for a while. These are ones that we never were able to put together into actual 52-card decks after that. So there are a lot of playing cards in this item. You'll have a lot of fun with it, but you will not be able to put together a full 52 deck out of any of them unless you want to mix colors, which actually I was thinking about this because Rounders was on yesterday, so, you know, I watched it in your honor.
Yep.
And I actually think it might be an interesting – I haven't thought this through, all right? So, I mean, maybe we need to talk this over at the home game and all kinds of other stuff. But what if you were to make a deck with four different colors?
Wow.
Everybody knew what the colors were, so I nobody had more information than anybody else.
So it would be an equal amount of cards that were – So there's no way to know that it's a spade or a heart or a So yeah,
a little extra information, right? You would know that it's a green card. It would be, you know, a wheel card, right, or something like that.
Well, no, I think what you would do is you would make sure that you had just a good variety of those colors too, so you wouldn't even know, like, all right, so the green card is, you know, if everything is equal, then you don't know what it is. So if you had a full set of hearts in green and a full set of spades in blue and et cetera, then there still would be zero. You know, I mean, you wouldn't know. And then you mix them up so that it wouldn't be like, oh, I know that's a spade coming. You'd mix it up. So you'd have like three of each color from each deck. So there was no way you would know then. It's zero information given.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe it's not as exciting of a game as I thought it might be. But.
Well, like I said, if you did it perfectly, then it wouldn't be exciting. If you did it your way, where we all turned over the cards and said, okay, well, I know there's more wheel cards that are green or whatever, then you'd be like, okay, well, then you got more information. But if you did it perfectly balanced, you know, because, you know, there's, what, 13 cards per suit.
Yep.
So if you did it basically perfectly balanced, where it was, you know, ace through queen is one, or through jack is one, and so on, I think it would be, you know, you can make decks. I'm trying to make it so that the person buying the J Design playing cards can make a deck out of it, so they don't feel like they have to buy
deck out of it. There's,
I mean, a fair deck,
in this item. So yeah, but no, I think we just made it more exciting now, because now somebody out there is going to try to figure out how to make this game work, and then they're going to send us a listener spotlight, and we're going to get content for the show. So,
yes,
double dipping here, buddy.
Yes.
All right, the next item is a card covers collection. So, let me back up a little bit on where all this stuff is. We call it the Anti-Up Vault. I've got, like, cabinets and boxes all over my office of stuff that either we've acquired over the years, a lot of stuff that our fans sent us. None of that's on the auction. We're not going to auction any of that great stuff off. That stays with us. And then stuff we've accumulated in other ways. And we have a lot of stuff that people, you know, poker rooms have given us as we've gone on our travels, a lot of stuff that the poker companies have sent us unsolicited, right? Hoping that we'll do reviews or whatever on their stuff. Some of the stuff I save and I do for raffle prizes for charities, and I held on to some of that stuff. But the stuff that I don't think we could really get rid of that way, this is kind of some of the stuff that we're doing. So card covers, we have a bunch of card covers I've accumulated over the years from different places. So if you're a card cover collector, this is a great item for you. So check those out.
Cool.
All right, we got a Chris Ferguson bobblehead now, and it is branded with Full Tilt. So we are not dictating what you do with these items when you get them. So if you would like to dispose of this item after winning it, that is your freedom. So go ahead. But and we also have a David Devilfish Elliott bobblehead, also branded with Full Tilt, though I don't think he really got tagged with the Full Tilt stink as much as Chris Ferguson
did.
But I there was a World's back, you know, back in the day, the World Series had the big poker expo in one of the rooms there. And somebody was selling all these different bobbleheads, and I bought all of them because I was a bobblehead collector back then. So these two were on my desk at some point years ago, and then they got locked in the closet. So I'm bringing Chris Ferguson and David Devilfish Elliott out of the closet, Chris. And,
nice.
So two separate items, two separate auctions for the two separate bobbleheads. So all right, and then we have this, you know, that famous dogs playing poker print from, I forget who it is now, Coolidge, I think his name
is.
Yeah,
Coolidge.
So I have a print of that, and we put it in a wood frame and painted it blue, and that was featured in our room where we used to play the NA Poem game. So watched over us as I lost money to Chris. it was there for the infamous Kentucky Derby day at the it's got a lot of history with the Annie Up Home game, so it's a little piece of the Annie Up Home game history. No longer on the wall in our new, as we renovated that room. So it is now being offered to you. It's quite large, actually, too. So it'll be nice in your – a couple items that would be good on your man cave or woman cave or poker cave or whatever, wherever you play poker. All right, next one is my favorite one. It's a mystery box of poker products and novelties. And as I mentioned, you know, this is a lot of stuff that people sent us hoping that they were going to be the next big poker product genius. A lot of them were pretty funny. Probably didn't work out. Some of the stuff is pretty cool, though. But, you know, when I put together these raffle prizes, I don't like to put in stuff that's, like, too weird in them. So this is kind of the weirder stuff. There's no inventory on what's in that mystery box, but I did pick a picture on the auction site so you can at least see some of the stuff that's in it. But
as the one ring to rule them all in there, it reminds me of the episode of Big Bang when they buy the box of junk and then they find the ring from the Peter Jackson movie set.
I cannot promise you that, but there is some interesting stuff in there. Oh, and I forgot, in the card covers collection, too, there is a unique one-of-a-kind anti-up card cover included in that as well, too.
Right.
Some company made for us that it is now could be yours. So.
Excellent.
All right. So there's a poker light switch wall plate for my office. I bought this at a flea market years ago. It's a King of Clubs, I believe, if I remember correctly. And it was in my office forever. And, you know, we just had all this electrical work done around the house. We had all of our light switches switched out to the new modern, like the push button ones rather
than
switchy ones, right?
Yeah.
And they went a little crazy. I didn't ask them to do the one in my office, but they went ahead and did it. So the switch plate does not work anymore.
Right.
So it's a nice item, and plus it, you know, it's been in my office, so it's got a little ante up history as well too. So that might be something you might be interested in. As we mentioned when we first started teasing the auction, another item are these old school poker video games, including the infamous TJ Cloutier game. they worked on Windows 4 or something like that. I don't know. So I don't know if they're even playable now, but if you are, I'm sure there's, with a lot of our geek heads that listen to the show, some of them have some old school computers that can still play these games on. And they might still work on Windows 10. I don't know. I haven't tried, but they are DVDs, and haven't had a laptop with a DVD in years, so don't know how you're going to play them. But anyhow, they're two together, and they still have the $5 garage sale tags that I had. They did not sell. So, you know, this 32 auction site, they allow you to put an estimated value for these items. And most of them are priceless, of course, right? Because, you know, you can't buy this stuff. These, obviously, I could not price them higher than $10 because that's what I marked them on the flea market. But anyhow, if you want to remember the TJ Cloutier game from the previous shows, you might enjoy this one if you can figure out a way to play them. All right, two more items left. The next one is promotional poker chips. You know, again, a lot of them came from people buy these promotional chips to do to giveaways at tournaments and things like that. So collected a lot of them, and some of them were sent to us again. So if you're a poker chip collector, Vic G, you might be this item, even though they none of them were actually used in casinos, so they're not casino use chips. They're all promotional chips.
I remember the first year you and I went to the expo together, we probably got 50 of those chips just from people that everyone thought they were going to be brilliant and use their chip like their business card.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We got hundreds of them from that. I probably threw out 1,000 of those chips by the time my career was over, just from people giving them to us when we go to those things. It's crazy.
I would imagine a lot of the chips in this item are from
yeah. companies at yeah, the expo. Yeah. A lot of them were nice, too. They were like the ceramics, the really nice chips, you know?
Nice. I don't know what you're going to use them for other than card covers. I mean, some are big enough to use for card covers, but, you know.
Never know.
I don't. Somebody's trash is somebody else's treasure, right?
That's so. Right.
And then our final one is a copy of the Winning Women of Poker strategy book, which Chris, if you all remember, edited. And it is autographed by him. Now, of course, all the rest of the stuff we can autograph as well, too. But this is a special one autographed by Chris. And I won't even autograph it because I had nothing to do with it other than I read it. So.
Here's the deal, too. I didn't sign an NDA. So if somebody buys this, I can tell you exactly what chapters I actually wrote and didn't just edit. I ghost wrote it. For three of the chapters in that book, I wrote them completely. So I've never told anybody that ever, but I didn't sign an NDA, and I don't think they make the book anymore. So hell with it. Whoever gets it, if they want to know what chapters they are, I'll tell you.
Yeah, so you know which three chapters to avoid.
Exactly.
So anyhow, that's 16 great items. Once again, the website is 32auctions.com/anteup. We'll post it in the Annie Up fans page on Facebook as well, too. Happy bidding, and it will continue from now. It's already live, and it will continue through 9 p.m. Eastern on July 20th. And we will remind you next week, and then I look forward to talking about the millions and millions of dollars that this auction generates for us. And, yes, I should admit that the charity we designated for this auction is the Scott and Chris Fund.
Yes, we're going to be able to eat meat at the end of July, I think, for the first time in 13 months.
So all the proceeds here will go to beer and bonsai products. So.
And you said July 20th, one small step for a magazine, one giant leap for our bank account.
So, yeah, so hopefully you guys will have some fun with this and enjoy it, and hopefully you'll buy all of it so I can get out of my office here and, have some space, because I've been tripping over this stuff for weeks.
Yeah, and we're paying for shipping, so we're really not making a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't tell you, but I pumped up some of the prices today, Chris.
Oh, good, good.
Sure, we didn't lose our money.
Good.
Only Annie could lose money on a fan auction.
So. I know, we're not too smart.
Anyhow, enjoy happy bidding, folks.
Excellent.
All right, this is the week's updates on poker room reopenings. In Arizona, Desert Diamond Casino Tucson has reopened its poker room. In New York, Del Lago Resort Casino has reopened its poker room. And in Nevada, Planet Hollywood will close its poker room permanently on July 11th. We now have 258 reopened poker rooms in the United States. AnteUpMagazine.com/reopen. Let's verify details on poker room reopenings. If you have updates, email us at editor@AnteUpMagazine.com. We are also emailing in weekly e-blast with updates to you can subscribe to on the homepage at anteupmagazine.com.
Each week, we spotlight a listener who emails us to podcast at anteupmagazine.com. If they haven't won something from us in the past year, it's like we do the call to the foreign hand of the week. We send them something cool. This comes from East Coast Big Al. How do you get that nickname? Do you give it to yourself? Or is it like on Big Bang where they have to give it to you?
Yeah, that's if you have to give yourself. It's like, remember T-Bone on Seinfeld?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You can't give yourself your own nickname, so somebody has to give it to you, it doesn't stick.
And then they'll call him, what, Coco at the end because of the gorilla or whatever, right? All right, so East Coast Big Al says, even though most of the poker rooms have reopened, there are still no tournaments anywhere in Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, except Maryland Live. The reason seems to be a lack of dealer staff to field tournaments. What happened to all the dealers? Did they all move to Florida and Nevada? It's hard to imagine Parks and Borgata with no tournaments, and yet they have announced none for the foreseeable future. MGM National Harbor had to cancel all evening tournaments due to lack of personnel. Is it because cash games are so much more profitable for the rooms?
Okay, so a very long answer here. I went back and forth with Big Al. Lots of things are at play here. One, coming out of the pandemic, there's a worker shortage everywhere in the hospitality industry. You know, bars or restaurants can't find anybody to work. A lot of casinos, I mean, some are offering up to $4,000 bonuses now to come back to work to casinos. So that's part of the reason that there really aren't enough people willing to work anymore. Now, reasons for that we could go into all day long, but there's lots of articles if you want to Google as to what's going on. It's not as simple as unemployment. There's lots of other things going on. So in the dealer situation, I would think, one, if you were a dealer and you really like dealing, the rooms up in that Northeast, they didn't open as quickly as the rooms down here in Florida did, right? So mm-hmm. I would imagine some did come down to Florida or other places to deal and probably decide they liked it and not going home. I mean, you left Connecticut, came to Florida, you didn't go back, right?
That's right.
So that's one thing that I think is going on. And so what that means is if you don't, if you have a shortage of dealers, and also remember, a lot of these rooms are still operating under some kind of COVID restrictions. So not all of them have opened up all their tables. You know, the tables are spaced out, limited hours, all kinds of things like that. Right. So you put all that stuff in the big cauldron stirred around, and what happens is you have to focus on what makes you the most money, and that is cash games. So the tournaments are what gets sacrificed. And so I did a little math problem here for East Coast Big Al, Chris, that I thought might be interesting for our listeners that have not really realized the economics of tournaments versus cash games. So
you want to I just want to caution our listeners, whenever math and Scott are involved, the truth is not exactly revealed. So,
well, I know you'll be writing these numbers down and correcting me as I go. So,
sure, I will.
All right. So here was the kind of the example that I made up. It's a very crude example, but it kind of gives you an idea of why cash games are more profitable than tournaments. So, let's assume that you. Well, first of all, an average cash game table makes about $100. You know, depending on how fast the dealers are, what the games are, you can make more or less, but let's say $100. That's a general rule.
Right? An hour,
yes. Right. Okay, so let's say your local room offers a $100 tournament, and they take $20 for the house. So, and let's say that tournament gets 90 entrants, right? So that's $1,800 that the poker room makes off of running that entire tournament, right?
Right.
Sounds good, right? So, but here's the thing. You have to start that tournament with 10 tables. And you're not going to break any of those tables in the first hour. So if you think about it in that terms, that's you've given up $1,000 in cash game revenue, assuming you could have filled it with cash game players, right?
Right,
so,
right.
So already 1,000 of that 1,800 that you've made is essentially gone in this scenario, right? Make sense so far?
Right.
All right. So then let's say in the second hour you're averaging 6 tables. Yeah, I got a couple tables broken. So that's another 600 in cash game revenue lost. So now you're up to 1600 and you've made 1800 on the tournament, right? So now in the third hour, let's say you have average of three tables. And so that's another 300. So now you're up to 2100 that you could have made in cash and you only made 1800 on the tournament and the tournament's not over yet, right?
Right.
So that's a good way of kind of looking at the math in these rooms, and that's why a lot of rooms, you know, focus on cash games. Now, and the other thing I said is really tournaments, for the most part, are – I don't want to say loss leaders because some rooms make a lot of money on tournaments, but they're really designed for two things. If you're a small room, you're running tournaments to get people into the room, and hopefully that they'll stick around and play cash, right? So
right.
That's why you have like these $30 turbo tournaments in the morning. Maybe you have one in the afternoon or something like that where they make almost no money off that, but they're hoping that after you bust out, you're going to play cash. The other side of it is these big rooms like Regatta. It's a prestige thing, right? So they've become famous because of their big tournaments. So there's a reason to run those too. But even those are not always terribly profitable. And I know I've told this story before, but there was a poker room manager at a pretty major poker room that told me once when I was sitting in his office, that the casino doesn't look at some – not all casinos do this, but his particular casino don't look at a tournament in the overall profit realm, right? Because
mm-hmm.
every department has their own goals. So in this particular room, which used to run a couple major series, those free comp beers and Red Bulls and stuff that you get as a player in the tournament, he had to buy from the food and beverage department.
Mm.
So when they have their monthly execs meeting, the food and beverage guys are bragging about this fantastic month they had. And then the poker room is up like 5% or so because they still did well, but they had to like support everything else. So that makes it kind of difficult for some of these rooms as well, too. So, yeah, tournaments are always going to be the first thing to get knocked off. And remember also, too, that poker is the least profitable portion of a casino as well, too. So that's why a lot of the poker rooms, you know, we're happy that 258 are reopened now. But a lot of those ones that aren't reopened, it's because, you know, with limited capacity, it doesn't make much sense to have a poker room.
There are a lot of intangible things that aren't really equated in the math that we're talking about, but it's a general outline of how, things work. I mean, you know, if you had plenty of room in your poker room and you were just a poker room, all you're really doing is just paying the dealers X amount of money. And then, you know, those people may not be in your poker room if you didn't offer the tournament. So it's not like you're sacrificing cash games for them. And so, I mean, there's a lot of intangible things. One of the things that I wanted to say that I just wasn't sure I was going to bring up at the beginning of the end was, in that particular region of the country where East Coast Big Al is from, when you and I were in the heart of the expansion of the magazine and those areas were still booming and expanding with new poker rooms, they always just applied for the cash games first. And then it took them, I specifically remember a couple of the ones that were like in the West Virginia area where they were just like, there's no reason to run tournaments. We're packed every single day with cash games. Why would the tournaments are there to bring in people who may not come in to play cash games, but if they bust out early, they'll play cash games. So these guys, they didn't apply for the tournament license or whatever for like years because they were just packed every single day with cash games. There was no reason for it. And that is where most people play their poker. I mean, a lot of people learned how to play poker from television poker that was always tournaments. So that's why a lot of people got into the game in the beginning. But once poker was already in the zeitgeist or whatever, cash games dominated, and a lot of these guys never even applied for them. So it's, some of them are probably looking at this as like, hey, this is great. We don't have to run tournaments anymore because now we have a reason to not run them. We could tell people it's a lack of personnel, or we could tell them that, you know, tell them whatever we want to tell them, you know.
Yeah. And actually, Al even suggested that this is just an excuse, and I started off my response, I'm like, well, I don't think it's really an excuse. But then towards the end, I'm like, but it could be an excuse. You know, it's easier to say, hey, we don't have the staff or the space to run tournaments than it is to say we just don't want to run tournaments anymore.
Right.
So, yeah, it's an interesting thing going on here. And you're right. You know, if you have all the space and the staff, there's no reason not to. But the last thing you want to do is break a cash game to run a tournament. I mean, that's like a kiss of death in a poker room. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things in the behind the scenes when you're like looking at things, you know, like maybe there are, 8 people on the list for a new horse game. But those 8 people on the list are all in no limit hold'em games.
Right.
But it's not going to like you. Like, so you talk to them and like, hey, there's 8 of us. We're ready to go. And the program's like, nope, we're not going to break 3 no limit cash games to make a horse game that makes us half the revenue. So,
yeah.
A lot of stuff like that too. So, until things get back, and some of this is gaming commission stuff too. I mean, those poor Massachusetts rooms, I don't think that's Encore or MGM Springfield's decision not to offer poker now. I think it's the gaming commission still isn't allowing them during COVID to reopen too. So there's that as well too.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So a lot of stuff fighting against it. Okay, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what that proper ruling should have been, email us at podcastannie@magazine.com. We'll have Rivers Casino Schenectady Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. It's our friend Steve Pavlicek. He says, 2 players get all in on a flop of ace of spades, queen of diamonds, 10 of hearts. Player A has pocket tens for a set. Player B has pocket kings. The turn is the ace of spades, and the river is the 8 of hearts. Player A wins the hand with a set of tens. While the pot is being awarded, player C notices the board contains 2 aces of spades and stops the dealer from awarding the pot. Upon reviewing the 2 ace of spades cards, it is determined that one of the ace of spades is from the other deck of cards at the table. We play with 2 decks, and the player behind the button shuffles 1 deck while the dealer is dealing. Unfortunately, the colors on the back of the cards are very similar and was not easily noticeable that the cards got intermixed. How would you handle this situation? Is the hand over and player A is awarded the pot? Is the hand dead and all bets returned? Do you replace one of the duplicate cards with the new card from the stub? Dealer removed the turn card, duplicate ace of spades, burnt a card, and then dealt a new river card, which was the five of clubs, which did not change the outcome of the hand.
All right, once again, we're letting our good friend Elliot unpack up there in New York, so I'll handle this one. First thing I would suggest is that you go to 32auctions.com, Steve, and buy that J Design bunch of cards, and then make a deck with all multiple colors, and then everything's messed up over the game, right? So,
oh, you're killing me.
Problem solved, right? All right, now, in reality, Poker TDA Rule 35E, I always like when they get into the letters and stuff.
Yes.
I wish they had, like, a subsection or something.
Yeah, subset, yeah.
Anyhow, Poker TDA Rule 35E, which is new, states that as soon as a foul deck is discovered, action is stopped and all bets are returned. I would say your foolish decision, though, is probably what most home game hosts would have done in that situation, and we're certainly glad to hear that it didn't change the outcome. So this was discussed at the last Poker TDA Summit, and all these discussions are really interesting, I think, for me as some of an outsider. You know, we run the ANF cruise rooms and we talk to directors, but we're not really a poker room director at all, right? So they have a base of knowledge that I haven't even scraped yet. So, and a lot of this was determined by gaming commissions, right? So, I mean, so they discussed whether they should have a TDA rule that when there are so many gaming commissions that have their own rules and no poker room manager is going to do a poker TDA rule over a gaming commission rule,
right,
and license, right? So, I mean, gaming commissions, part of the reason that they exist is to maintain fair games. And, you know, anytime you have something that suggests that that particular deal, whether it's at a blackjack table or a poker table, was compromised, you want to immediately stop that, give everybody their money back, and not have any issues where people can say that you were playing with a foul deck. So that's where that comes from. So, and that's why, you know, when you do those poker room promotions, you know, high hands and stuff like that, that they always count down the deck and make sure all the procedures are right before they award the money. And sometimes you don't get the money because, you know, the deck was missing a card or whatever, right? And it gets people upset. But, you know, it has to be up.
What's really bizarre is, let's say it's one of those family pots where everyone limped on pre-flop, and the flop came, and you had somebody bet the minimum, and you had three callers. And then on the turn, you have a guy bet, and another guy call, another guy go drops, and then he shoves. And it's like you got seven people in this hand who've put different amounts into the pot, and now you notice ace of spades and the hand's all over.
Yeah.
Oh, geez,
yeah.
Try to reverse engineer that.
I've actually seen a pot reverse engineered like this before, too, and it's not fun. I mean, I feel bad for the floors when they have to do that.
Right.
But the really good ones know how to do it pretty easily, right? So, I mean, you try to reconstruct the action, and, you know, if you go backwards, it's a little easier because you have fewer players in the hand at that point. But the pre-flop is always the easiest, obviously, because, you know, you go back and, you know, was there a raise? Okay, what was the raise? How many people were in? And then, all right, so you know that. You can portion that part out, and then you have to figure out going forward. But it's not easy.
But here's the deal. Here's the thing where you can't do it without an eye in the sky. And obviously in a home game tournament, they don't have an eye in the sky. But imagine it's one of those times, and we've all been there, when you say, I'm all in. The other guy says, I call. They turn over the cards. They don't even count the chips yet. And it's obvious what player A has more than player B, and player B lost. They just smash it into the pot. He rakes it in. As he's raking it in, then they notice the ace of spades. Well, I have no idea what you had in your stack at that moment. There's no idea.
Yeah. Well, at that point, though, you reverse engineer the rest of it, right? So everything else is a defined bet. So in that scenario, I mean, whatever's left over was what that last bet was, right?
Yeah. I mean, but you don't. I mean, yeah, I guess so. It just sometimes the other player puts his money in first. And then he's like, I got your cover, and then they just stack it all together and pull in a pot, and you don't know. You know what I mean? It's just, it's a nightmare. That's a nightmare, that situation. Most of the time, it can be reverse engineered pretty easily, but that's a nightmare when that happens.
You know, it definitely is a nightmare. Worse, bigger nightmare is losing your gaming license.
Yeah. And,
the room closed down, so.
But for the home game, you know,
but yeah,
you're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, before I double check this rule, you know, it does seem like, I would think 90% of home games would probably move the same way, right? That just burned another card and put it out, and that card you know, as one of our poker cruise managers used to say, is a napkin. You know, so if you're dealing and that, whoa, oh, lightning here, sorry.
Was that thunder and lightning?
Oh, man.
Holy cow, that was awesome. That's awesome.
Hold on, I need to pick my heart up off the ground.
Holy cow.
The old chest there, whoo, man.
I thought you just fell over in a drunken stupor. I couldn't tell what that noise was at first. Holy cow, that was loud.
Yes, it was. So you know, if you're dealing and you notice that there's a green card, rather, well, it should be a brown card, right? You just take that card out of the deck. It doesn't have any value anymore.
Right.
It's considered a napkin, right? So, but in this case, it was actually played, and that makes it much more difficult. So I can see if you're thinking of it that way, that's a good solution to it, and it probably is. You know. I mean, it worked out well that it didn't change the outcome of the hand here, but in that scenario. Now, you know, if you're playing with five aces in the deck the entire hand, though, I mean, maybe it does at some point. So,
all right, well, let's move the show along before Scott gets electrocuted or if he loses power and we can't finish the show today. So we get to complete O'Malley's move, so here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are back at the old 5-cent, 10-cent No Limit Hold'em home game. The buy-in here is $20 and the game is five-handed. We all know each other very well as we play in this game regularly. There is one maniac, one inexperienced player, one solid player, and one speculative player. The small blind posts. We're in the big blind. We have been having a good night so far as we have doubled our buy-in and are the big stack at the table. We post. The under-the-gun calls, the plus one raises to 40 cents. This player is the speculative one, but knows how to play the game. He usually ends up with more money than he came with. He started the hand with $12, down $8. The button folds, the small blind folds, and we look down at the ace of clubs, king of hearts. Since we all know each other well, I'm going to take a line here that I normally wouldn't. I'm going to limp to underrep my hand. I don't recommend this in a standard full-ring casino cash game, but with players who are very familiar with each other and short-handed, sometimes you have to go against GTO. The under-the-gun calls. The pot is 125, and the flop is the king of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, tray of spades. This is a perfect situation for an under-repped ace-king. We're going to lead out here. We make it 80 cents to go. The under the gun folds, but the plus one calls. The pot is 285 and the turn is the 10 of clubs. I believe this card hits my range more than his, as I could potentially have more tens in my range. Now comes the question. Do we check or bet this? We decide on a bet. I want to bet on the larger side to make it look like I'm bluffing and to punish any flush draws he may have. We make it 225 to go. After some thought, our opponent calls. The pot is 735 and the river is the ace of spades. We slow down and check. The plus one bets $5. What's the move?
Our opponent's action for the flop has been either on a draw or a 10, waiting to see how badly we'll hang ourselves. I feel like we have this wrapped up, but because that 10 is possible, I'm just calling.
Yeah, I say let's call because we beat or tie a lot of hands. Here comes part two.
Hello again. I know. If we were good on the turn, we're probably good here. Maybe checking the river was a bad move. Let's go over this for a moment. Our opponent raised preflop after an under-the-gun limp. This could be queen-jack suited, but I ultimately think that hand limps along and doesn't raise. I think a 10 probably goes for value on the turn. I checked my cards to see if I had the ace of diamonds, which I do not. Doesn't this feel like maybe a busted nut flush draw? I can't bring myself to raise, but I think this could be the ace of diamonds, X of diamonds, that now has aces and tens with the king kicker and is value betting. We call. Our opponent shrugs and tables the ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds. Phew, that was a big draw. We table our top two and take down the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes it's not about the cards you are holding, but the cards you are not. I hope to see you on the felt.
Yep, he was drawn to the world and ended up with Pluto.
Yeah, just because we won doesn't mean a call was wrong. I think we got max value here. I don't think we need to raise there. I think that's the right thing to do, even though we won. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, you would have won the hand, or you won the hand. Why not make more money there? But no, I think that's the right thing to do right there. So good to go.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTrading.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Brandon Huff is back in the house, Chris.
Wow.
This week, so he's slacking off on us. But so he says, this is from a 1-2 no limit hold'em game. And let's see, I got to move your fat head out of the way. Because
yes.
Here we go. All right. So he says, I've been doing pretty well. I'm pretty deep at this point. I have around 550. I've gotten several good breaks this session. There's one limp from the under the gun to me, and it is to us. And I don't know where we are at the table, but it is on us with the five of spades, tray of spades. Oh, I'm sorry. We're on the button.
All right, so we're on the button. We're clearly just playing this to. Although he say something about like there. This is like one of those hands where you can win something with, or no?
I did not. I don't see that.
The only reason I would play cards like this is if there's a high hand or something.
I'm sorry. You're right. Mystery high hand is in effect with prizes up to $2,000 for the hour's high hand. So everyone is playing more hands.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, then if that's the case, then I would consider playing this hand for a limp, you know, or whatever. Or if I know how these players all play really well, and I know that just having position on them and three betting might get a lot of people to fold and then take it after the pot. I might just play the people, not the cards. So, but in this case, you know, you got these little suited one gappers and. What the hell? I'd limp it wrong.
I'm actually curious what the mystery high hand is.
Yeah.
A high hand is a high hand, right?
Right. Could be straight flush.
Is the mystery that it has to be a straight or it has to be a flush and you don't know to the end?
Right.
I don't know. But $2,000 is nice, though. So, yeah. Definitely with that going on, the fact that we're on the button. The only player is under the gun. I can see myself putting $2 in this pot and hoping to hit for $2,000 plus a pot. All right. Let's see. We call as well. The small blind raises to $13, and he says that's about a standard raise at this table, not out of the ordinary. Made it a little light for the worst position at the table, in my opinion. The big blind folds. The under gun folds, and it's back to us.
Well, I mean, we're still in position. I don't know. It depends on what this player is like. But I don't know. We're still in position. You might as well just call and see what this player plays. He might hit a nice flop here and take a big stack from this guy. So, you know, it just depends on how he plays. And you'll have position the whole way. And if you're up a bunch and this isn't that big of a position percentage of your stack, let's take a flyer, like Scott likes to say.
Yeah, this is a really interesting spot because you got the small blind raising from the worst position. We are on the button, the best position, right? Everybody else is out of the way. So this is a situation where we could put a lot of pressure on this small blind throughout the rest of the hand. Plus, also, we're assuming that he has a decent hand here, right, because he's raising the small blind. And we've got the exact opposite.
Yeah. Right?
This is a stackable hand, if you call it, right? So if we get anywhere near our hand here, I think we can get this guy stacked because he's probably going to overcommit. So at this point, even though we're heads up, the pot's not that big, it's worth $13 for me, particularly if I'm feeling good. And it sounds like we have been playing well today, too. So, I mean, this is a situation where we can now play this player, I think.
Yep.
All right, let's see. All right, so we do call, and he says, again, something of a lark. We're both so very deep that my cards in position have some possibilities, and we're heads up. He says the small blind is sitting on a stack of over 800, so he has this covered. He seems to have been at the table bowly before I showed up. He's in a lot of pots. I've taken him down a notch a couple times this session already. The woman to the immediate left of me and I The woman to the immediate left of me left. And I took her seat so that anyone sitting down is on my right. Just after that, the player now on my left leaves and the small blind player took that seat. It might have been for other reasons, but it might have been to get position on me. We're the two big stacks at the table now. Accordingly, since that move, I've been playing more conservative. and it happens almost card dead. He seems both tricky and competent, calls a lot of raises, and not afraid to get it in there and mix it up. All right, so yeah, so we can definitely stack this guy, but it's going to be harder to play against him because he's not going to go away easily, right? So right. If you get your normal, more cautious small blind that's raising with his aces or kings there, you'll be able to push him off that hand pretty easy. This guy's going to be harder to push off, so we're going to need some help from the card gods, I think, here to win this pot.
I'd like to assure our listeners that that is not Scott's heart racing in the background. That's his phone vibrating that he's been doing for the last 15 years on the show. It's vibrating on his desk rather than just putting it in his pocket so we couldn't hear it or feel it. It's okay. Been editing that into the show for 10 years, you know. There it is again. So you can hear it.
Yeah, that's the voicemail now. So it must be
really that's right.
Because no one leaves a voicemail unless it's really important. All right, y'all. So go to the flop, $28. Remember, our heads up. The flop is the 10 of clubs, 5 of hearts, tray of diamonds, small blind, bets $15.
Okay, well, we got bottom two. And a theme throughout the show is TJ Cloutier today. So he once told us in a lecture on our cruise ship that the hand that loses the most money in poker is bottom two pair. So you want this to be over with. If he's got a set, you're screwed. But if he's got an over pair or something, then you might as well get it in. If he's just doing that to back up his bet, you know, to c-bet and take control like he had, or keep control, then, you know, whatever, you still need to make a raise here. So I'm making a pretty big raise, you know, 45, 50 bucks.
Yeah, definitely. You got to play this fast now because, again, unless he has pocket tens, we've got him crushed here. And he's not going to believe that we have him crushed here, right? So let's play this really fast. Let's get a big raise in here and see if he overcommits his stack. Mm-hmm. All right, our hero raises to $50. He says, I have a bottom two pair, and that means I need to play it fairly fast. Our opponent calls after a bit and quips. Oh, I love the word quips.
Quips.
Quips. Oh, now I'll have to look at my hand. Oh, I always like when people do that. Jerk. he said, I figured he was joking and lying. Afterwards, I found out he wasn't, but I had missed that he hadn't looked at his hand pre-flop. So, wow. Okay, so that changes things now, right? Because we assumed he knew what he had.
Right.
And was playing big cards. Now he could have really anything at this point, literally anything, and I'm going to cry if he has like 10-5 or 10-tray, something like that, right? So that changes things a little bit now. And the fact that he called, though, means that he has something, so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this hand plays out now. All right, with $128 in the pot, the turn is the deuce of clubs, so our flop now is 10 of clubs. 5 of hearts, tray of diamonds, deuce of clubs, and the small blind checks now.
Shove. Oh, yeah, that sounds funny. I'm shoving, though. I'm serious. Because here's the thing. If he called, that means he's got a piece of it. He's going to either try to check raise you here, and he's just trying to get out of this mistake he made if he was telling the truth that he didn't look at his hand. And if he's telling the truth that he didn't look at his hand, then I think we're ahead. The only way we're behind is if he really has some sort of set or a weird 10-3, 10-5, 10-deuce combo, which is kind of weird. So I think we're ahead, and I think we need to protect our hand. You know, he could have something like a 10 in his hand, and now he gets that, you know, the deuce pairs on the end, and he's got 10s and deuces because we didn't protect our hand. And if the pot's big enough for me to shove, I'm shoving.
I don't know if I'm going to shove, but I'm definitely putting a pot-size bet in here. I'm still betting this real big, so... because you're right. I'm like, we found out afterwards he wasn't lying. So at this point in the hand, we think he's joking. So we still think he's on big cards, right? So, so our hand is still super vulnerable. But we are almost assuredly ahead of him in that case. So, again, it's the same thing as making him, overpay for a draw. So if he's willing to call a pot-sized bet and doesn't know the right odds, you know, we are quote-unquote winning whether we end up winning this hand or not. So, got to bet big here.
Yeah.
All right, our hero puts out a big stack of red, $110, and he says, I'm still playing this hand fast. A small blind thinks for a few seconds and announces all in.
Yeah, I don't think I'm folding. I feel like this guy is either pushing us off this hand because he know he made a big mistake, or he thinks that his hand is stronger than what we could have, and he thinks that we're trying to steal it. And I just don't feel like he has us beat. I mean, he may have us beat. He might have some weird 10-5 combo. Or he may have an overpair and was trying to sell the whole, I really didn't look at my hand, but he really did look at his hand, and he thinks his aces or kings or queens or something like that is still good. But I don't think I'm folding. There's a lot of money in that pot now. So there was 120 something in the pot before, then 110, 110, that's 220. So you're looking at 350 basically for us to call. You know, I that's in the pot already. It's a big pot, and I got a ton of money out there, and I got two pair. And it didn't really, I mean, unless he had a set, the only way he's beating us, you know, is a weird two pair. So I don't think I either believe him or that I'm behind, and there's no way I'm folding now. I'm calling.
Yeah, so the only problem with is if we are behind, we don't have probably a lot of outs to catch up. You know, if he's got a set or dead,
right.
If he's one of our cards, that's one less card that we can get to boat up. So that's the only danger here. But I think you're right. I'm like, it's really hard to imagine that we're behind here. So, I mean, I could be stupid and crying when we turn the cards over, but it's really hard for me to fold here.
Right.
All right. Here says, my first thought was to call. I have two pair. This play looks like an over pair. But then I settled down to think it over properly. This is a really friggin' huge pot now. He said, this is a really tough spot, and I say as much out loud. He shows strength pre-flop, bets out on the flop, calls a raise, then check raises all in. I'm into the hand for $163 so far, and I have just less than $400 behind. What hands do I lose to? 10-10, ace-4, most likely suited. 5-5, trey, and deuce, but I can't see that calling the preflop raise. The other two pair combos are even more unlikely, 10-deuce, 10-5, etc. I am coherent enough to know that there aren't many. I block the sets, especially for 10-10, which fits the play perfectly, however. What do I beat? All the other pockets, ace, king, queen, jack, 9-9, 8-8, 7-7, 6-6, 4-4, and all the single pair tens, ace-10, king-10, queen-10, jack-10, 10-9, 10-8. Not all would play this way for sure. Maybe some of those combos are two clubs as well, would make for a better semi-bluff. Looking back on that, that is a lot of combos. Long after the fact, I determined that for pot odds, I need 35.5% equity to break even. I also again consider that maybe the sea change was to get position on me, and this is the hand he's been waiting an hour plus to get to break me with. It is also a huge overbet, overbetting the pot by more than two entire buy-ins. But I just don't think it's a bluff or a semi-bluff. He thinks he has the best hand. That's what my read says. I bet pot on the turn and he jams. Unless he thinks my bet is a total bluff, he's expecting a call here, not a fold. His play does not really add up well. To be fair, I'm sure my play does not really add up either. We were both playing this very strangely. A really good topic to explore is what the small blind will put me on given my own play in this hand. I say out loud, this would make me the biggest genius here, the biggest donk, and I fold my hand face up. He just looks at it for a minute and then turns over his hand, 5-deuce offsuit, and says, I would never put you on that hand ever. Someone else at the table chimes in, if you made that call, I'm leaving. I can't play here. He says, should I have called? Much later, the next day. I was thinking that since I had only bought in for $140 for the session, even though I had $550 at the time, I could think about it as only risking $140 on the call. Is that a valid way to look at it?
I don't think that's a valid way to look at it.
No. Once you win that money's yours.
So. Yeah, and the 5-deuce, that's crazy. I mean, so, wow, it's pretty much what he was telling the truth. And that's the thing is he gave it away early. He said that the guy was actually telling the truth, that he didn't really look at his cards or he didn't have good cards to start. So it could have been 10-5 that he stumbled upon, but ended up being 5-deuce and we would have won. Wow, that's crazy. Again, a lot of his reasoning there was based on the guy lying, because almost all those hands that he listed, the guy wasn't going to have, you know, he wasn't playing it for a raise preflop with ace, king, queen, jack, because he didn't look at his hand. You know what I mean? So at the time he had to think that way. He had to believe that the guy was telling a lie. And that he actually could have all those hands, which sucks. So now the guy is making you think, now I have to think of every scenario rather than just the ones that make most sense. Because that there are things that don't make sense now with him joking or lying to you or not. For us, when he told us that afterwards he found out that he wasn't lying, that he didn't look at his cards, that made it easier for us to say, I can call here or shove here because I don't think he really has the hand. The other thing is that it could have made it easier for us too if we knew he was lying. Because then we would have thought he probably had aces, because we didn't think he stumbled into Jack 5 or 5 deuce. We think he had kings, queens, aces, something like that, that would allow him to do all these plays that he made. So this is tough. When you're playing in a situation like this, when you have guys who are like this, where they're just looking at no cards at all and just playing the people or stuff like that, then you've got to really have a solid hand. And I thought we did have a solid hand. At the turn, I would have made my move. I know he folded, but I think I would have shoved before that guy had a chance to shove on me. Then he would have called, and he would have had five deuce, and we had five tray, and we would have won. And I just feel like at that moment, that hand is vulnerable. It's so vulnerable, and he checks to us. I don't want this guy to not make us have to think. I'd rather shove on him with, you know, 120,000 a pot, and we overbet it. So he just overbet it to us when we bet 110. He made it two buy-ins more than that on the shove. So obviously those are plays that are made in the poker world. And for me, I would have just not given him that chance to put me to the question. You know, that's the way we were always told, is to make them make all the decisions, not make us make decisions. And that's what I would have done.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that we folded there and would have won that pot. That would have really crushed this guy to know that he was messing around. And we just happened to be messing around, too, and pipped him. That would have been tragic for him, I think. Sometimes you can outthink yourself out of a pot, and I think that might have been what happened here. Because again, I go back to the fact that when he said, I need to look at my hand, that we thought he was joking at that time. It was only afterwards that we realized he wasn't. So in that moment, really the only legitimate hand I think that has his beat there is pocket tens.
Right.
All those other scenarios that we considered, I don't think we really should have been considering, because they just didn't make sense for the play and the position and the player. Though we've been playing with this player a long time, so I mean, there's probably a lot more about this player that isn't conveyed in the email that was part of it. But at that point, I mean, it'd be different if I realized early on that he really wasn't looking at his hand. Now all these combinations are possible, and maybe that's much easier for me to fold. But still, assuming that he looked at his hand pre-flop and played it the way, it's really hard for me to lay this down. So. But I definitely can't look at it. I mean, I think really this last question about looking at it as $140 on the call is really just trying to grasp at straws to try to justify making this call. It's the same reason that, the blackjack where you're playing with the house money. That's a ridiculous statement. You're not playing with the house money. That money is your stack, and it's yours now. So now what I will say is once you accumulate more chips, whether it's a tournament or cash game, now you're able to put more pressure on people. So you do probably make different decisions based on that. But you never go back and look at it as, hey, I only bet 100 or I only bought in for 100 and I'm up 1,000 now so I can play, fast and loose with this other 900, right? So.
Right, and we're victims of stuff like that, and it depends on who you're talking to and what you start to listen to people that you respect, and they say stuff like that, and you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But really, when you think about it, yeah, people will always say to you, oh, but poker's it's one long session, it's not this session. So, no, you have to make your decisions based on the stack in front of you at that moment, not based on, oh, I have three buy-ins back home in my bankroll that's sitting in my safe somewhere or something. You know, I mean, it's based on the moment. And at the moment, if you were making a good decision for the amount of chips you had in front of you, that's the right one. You don't make a bad decision and say, oh, well, I only bought in for X. No, you've built it up that day. And so now this is the decision you have to make based on this stack, not the buy-in. I know we talk about it on the show all the time where we'll say, well, you bought in for 200, you'd still be up X if you made this call. But we're not saying that gives you liberty to now make terrible calls just because you'd still make a profit on the day. We're just saying that, at this moment, you've clearly showed that you can beat this game and you're obviously up still for the day if you make that call, and you could probably build it back up again. We're not advocating you make a terrible call just because you'd still be winning after the loss, So in this case, I wouldn't look at it like I would have just lost 140. You're not risking 140. You're risking 550 because you could step away from that table and have 550 in your hand. Don't tell me you didn't risk it. You did. So you made the right fold in the moment. That's how you felt. But Scott's right. Only 10-10 is the hand that only makes sense there. And if he has 10-10, why is he shoving on you? is he really trying to protect his hand? I guess maybe against the clubs and the wheel, but for me, I feel like that guy would just call your bet if he had a set of 10 top set. I don't think he's that scared, given the way the hand was played. So, all right. Hey, thanks for sending us another hand. Sorry you folded. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.